Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Heifel, a reporter and writer of the From the Vine wine column for The Record in Stockton, California. I'm certified level 3 with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust and a part-time tasting room associate at the Lodi Wine and Visitor Center. I hope you enjoy this podcast, which focuses on the Lodi American Viticultural Area. I welcome your comments and reviews on our Facebook group page at recordnet.com/FTV209. And you can follow us at FTV209 on Twitter and Instagram. And welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Heifel of The Record, and it's my great pleasure to have with me today Steve Nelson and Doug Langham. They are partners for a new winery called McCullamy Cove Cellars. Gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for being with me.
Well, thanks for having us, Bob.
Steve, tell me about, well, let's start with yourself. You know, where are you from, and what's kind of your background?
Well, I retired 4.5 years ago from the mortgage business. I was a mortgage banker for 37 years, and during that period of time, I had been involved in a couple of other winery activities, but never to any great extent. And so when I retired, I felt I wanted to do something else, and I've always had a passion for the wine business. So I got together with a friend of mine that was a real estate broker, also recently retired, that had a similar passion. And we decided what we wanted to do was to make an award-winning Zinfandel. And so we put together a little business concept and started McCullamy Cove Cellars. Unfortunately, that fellow became quite ill and had to depart from the partnership. Mm-hmm. That's when, in fact, when Doug came on board. But that was our mission, to create an award-winning Zinfandel. And we released our first vintage 2016 Old Vine Zinfandel last year. And happy to say that we did win a medal. We won a silver medal at the Sunset Magazine International Wine Competition. So now we want to make sure we can get some gold to go up with that.
Fantastic. Absolutely great. So the 16 sold out. Is that true?
It sold out, yeah.
That's cool. Where can people find your wines? Let's get that out there right now.
The easiest place to find it right now is at Woodbridge Uncorked. They are our de facto tasting room. And then also available at several retail outlets around. Herbst Liquors in Stockton has been carrying our product, as well as Lakewood Liquors here in Lodi. Bubbles and Birds Restaurant has us on their menu. Papa Pavlo's has been carrying our wine. So there's a number of areas that it is available.
Who makes your wine?
Well, you know, we make our wine, mm-hmm. We are not a winery in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. We're a virtual winery. And what that means is we don't have any brick and mortar. You can't drive up to the McCullamy Cove Cellars estate and get a tour and do all the grand tastings. So what we do is we purchase grapes from individual growers around the area. Mm-hmm. And then we have a custom crush agreement with a state crush here in Lodi. Mm-hmm. And they manufacture then the wines to our specifications. So the crushing, pressing, barrel aging, all aspects of that occur at Estate Crush. And then once the wine is bottled, we go ahead and store that wine at Elite Wine Shipping here in Lodi, and they handle all of our fulfillment. So if you buy our wine online, it's Elite Wine Shipping that will process that order and get it out to you in a timely fashion.
Fantastic. Sounds like good people behind you there, Bob Colarossi and Allie at Estate Crush. They do a great job.
Yeah, they've done a real good job for us, and have done a good job on educating us about the wine business. So, you know, we stubbed our toes quite a few times, but they seem to walk us through it, and, you know, we're still in it.
Tell me about that. Has reality matched the idea, the thought going into the wine business? There have to be some things that surprised you maybe a little bit, or things that you found easier or more difficult as you went on this journey. Doug or Steve, any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, as I said, we've stubbed our toes on, you know, more than one occasion. And I think, you know, a couple of things come to mind. And the first part of it is that obviously the wine business is a very controlled business. We have licenses that have been issued by the federal TTB, Tobacco Tax Bureau, as well as the California ABC, Alcohol Beverage Control. So having to comply with all of those things and getting through all of that rigmarole was quite a process, timely and an expensive process, much more than we anticipated to begin with. And then the other aspect of it is, and not to make light of it, because it is a difficult thing, but making wine is easy. Selling wine is hard. And you can make the world's best wine, and if you can't sell it, then you're not a winery.
How tough is it? There's a lot of wine out there. There's a lot of competition. You're a single owned proprietorship, kind of navigating your way through this this labyrinth. What has that been like?
Well, it's been difficult. You know, as we went through the process, and you know, if you think about what it takes to make a bottle of wine, as I said, we just released last year our 2016 vintage. Well, that process actually started earlier than that. In 2015 is when we started the winery itself, had the first harvest in 2016 and didn't release that wine until 2018. So there's a couple of year time span when all you have are expenses. There's nothing that's coming in. And I would go around and talk to different restaurants and stores. Will you carry the product? And, you know, everybody would say, oh, sure, we're going to do that for you. But when push comes to shove and you show up with the case in hand and say, hey, can you sell my wine here for you? Oftentimes that story has changed. So price competition and just the proliferation of wine that's on the market, those are the things that you've got to overcome. And, you know, we've done a pretty good job of it, but we need to do better.
Well, Steve, getting into this and knowing those obstacles, you obviously had to think, hey, I can offer something different, something better. It was that kind of your mindset going in? It had to be, right?
Yeah, well, it was. In fact, that's why we started off with doing an Old Vine Zinfandel. My original partner and I both love Zinfandel. It's my favorite wine. And we had noticed over the years that there had been a deterioration of the quality of Old Vine Zinfandel that was coming on the market. The Zinfandel, the Old Vine Zinfandel, I should say, as you're probably aware, is a very expensive grape vineyard to maintain, very low yielding, high labor costs, things on that order. And so because Zinfandel had gained so much popularity, there was a lot of new Zinfandel that was planted. And those produce great wines, but it's a different complexity than an Old Vine Zinfandel. So many of the Old Vine Zin vineyards have been pulled and replaced with other vines or other crops, and we wanted to produce a premium Zinfandel. So that's what we've done. And I'll put our Old Vine Zinfandel up against anybody's. We take great care in it. But again, you've got the market out there that you've got to compete with. And an average consumer goes in and sees, hey, I can buy this bottle for $28, or I can buy this other one over here for $12. And oftentimes that $12 bottle is going to win.
I think that's one of the things that Lodi is dealing with, and maybe a little perspective or a little history might be in order at this point. There was a proliferation of Zinfandel planted, I want to say, in the 70s in Lodi, when white Zinfandel, when Sutter Home was just on fire. So some of those vines are now, 30, 40 years old. So some of them are still pumping out great fruit. Some have been pulled for other varieties, as you said. Zinfandel kind of, because of that, became Lodi's signature grape, but we're in a tricky spot now with that variety. The market's real soft for it. I hear growers a lot saying that they're not getting much. If they're under contract with some of the bigger wineries, they're just not getting the return on that variety that they would like to. So I think it's real important for people like you, Steve, to kind of show the potential and put out a product that's Old Vine Zinfandel that really shows the character of not only that grape, but what it can do here in Lodi. So I applaud you for that. And I think that hopefully over time is going to help keep some of these vines, you know, in the ground. Yeah, I don't know. Do you kind of feel the same way with that?
Yeah, precisely. That is really the crux of the problem, is trying to deliver a product that people feel is a good value. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the lowest cost to be the best value. And I think what we produce is an exquisite wine and delivers great value for its price. Not the cheapest Old Vine Zinfandel that's produced in Lodi, and certainly not the most expensive that's been produced here in Lodi, but we believe we deliver a great value. When Doug came into the picture, Doug by profession was a farmer and wanted to make a transition, was not a great farmer.
He was a great farmer.
Well, he's always been a great farmer, but he wasn't a great farmer. And when he came involved in it, Doug feels about Cabernet Sauvignon the same way that I feel about Zinfandel.
Oh, okay.
So he wants to produce a similar quality of Cabernet Sauvignon. So what Doug has done recently is he started planting his own vineyard, but we're not going to have product for that, obviously, for at least another probably 5 years at the outset. And so that'll be the new phase that we'll take off into, and we'll see where that takes us.
Why Cabernet, Doug? What is it about it?
Actually, it's just a personal taste issue, and we can talk about what makes a great wine and whatnot. And I think the one thing I've kind of learned over the years is your opinion and my opinion are different. So I can't argue with you what you like. I know what I like, and so why not make what I like and try and make a great one? So I kind of got inspired for this venture. We took a trip to France for my 50th birthday, and bouncing around the south of France, seeing the different vines and vineyards and how they grew them, and sort of listening to what their perspective on growing grapes was, and then having grown up here in California and being around a very different perspective, it kind of stuck with me of why can't you make the highest quality grape, the highest quality Zinfandel, the highest quality Cabernet right here in Lodi? What are the parameters that restrict us from doing that? And so the way my brain works, it just becomes a puzzle, and it's one I can't let go of. So then, from a farming perspective, I got to grow my own grapes at that point in time because I got to control them all the way through. I'm putting in kind of a different style of trellis. It's something that'll fit a little bit more with a European style of trellis that'll let more light into the grape. And they're planted north to south. We're going for full sunlight. Okay. So, just little things like that. And I think those attention to details, at least I hope. So I've planted several old style French clones that, are readily available around California. We'll see what happens. I think it's going to be fun.
That's exciting. Can you tell us where the vineyard is? What sub-AVA of Lodi are we talking about?
What AVA? Where is it?
Yeah, it's on the southeast side of Lodi over
okay.
here.
Okay. So it's probably still McComie River.
I think it's still McComie River. Yeah. I'm not sure. Right at the end of Armstrong. Out in that direction. That's awesome. True.
So close to Dave Dart's place.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I vacillate back and forth and thinking, is it the grape or is it the winemaker that makes a great wine? And, you know, I think from day to day to week, I change my opinion on what it is. But from a farming perspective, I always want to think it's the grape. So that's why I had to have my own and plant our own to see if it is the grape or see if it is, you know, the winemaking process. And I grew up in an area that was big in the dairy business, so a lot of cheese production and whatnot. And wine and cheese, you know, really kind of you're taking a good product and degrading it. You know, it's basically rotting into another product. And it's always kind of fascinated me, both on the cheese and wine side. You could probably go your whole life and never make the perfect wine or the perfect cheese because they're always going to be different. The inputs are going to be different. Everything's going to be a little different. So that's the one thing that is kind of cool about the wine industry is that you're never going to hit, you know, the grand slam home run. You're never going to hit it perfectly. There's always going to be something in there that you want to change. So it makes it kind of an exciting, you know, project for the long term. So,
yeah. Anyway. That is fascinating. Fermentation science, and then year to year, all the inputs are different. Vintages are going to be completely different. And when you're dealing with blends, they can be different from year to year, too, just based on what the output is and what you have to work with.
And there's so many small little details that, you know, that your bottling line broke down for 5 minutes and it took you a second and that changed. You know, it just is always kind of fascinating to me. My brother's been in the dairy business his whole life, and what you feed the cow and how the milk comes out makes the cheese taste differently. Right. You know, all that stuff just, it's kind of an endless round of possibilities. Absolutely. And, you know, wine falls right into that. Yeah. So, you know, my previous career was a row crop grower, so, you know, fresh vegetables and whatnot. And the end result is kind of the end result. You know, it's pretty, it's the same. There's no sort of really art to it, I guess is what I want to say. So the wine industry is a little more fascinating to me, and it is actually something I really kind of enjoy because it you can put a lot of thought into it. Everybody's got a different opinion, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
It's the one thing I've learned is when we kind of started all this, I think I argued my own opinion a little bit. So now I just kind of listen and take everybody else's opinion in and sit down and say, well, I agree with that. I don't agree with that. And we kind of just keep developing. But I think our best is still way yet to come. I'm pretty happy with the Cabernet we put out this year. I really, really, really enjoyed it. But I think we can do significantly better, which is the fun of all this, right?
Absolutely. So what's out now? Is it a 17 vintage Cabernet?
Yes, we have both the 2017 Old Vine Zinfandel and the 2017 Cabernet Sauvignon.
Okay.
The 2017 Zinfandel, completely different vineyard, completely different wine than our 2016. And that 2016 will never be duplicated because that particular vineyard was the victim of how this conversation started, as right after harvest, that vineyard was yanked and replaced with other varietals. So we made the move to a different vineyard. So our 2017-2018, when we released that, are from the same vineyard. And 2019, we've made another change moving forward.
Okay.
It's interesting between the two. It's almost 50-50 right down the middle when we have tastings of people like one versus the other. It's almost kind of comical. You would think one would be 80-20 or no. It's everybody's got different taste buds, so it's kind of nice that they both are a little different because, you know, if we had our release party a couple of weeks ago, and husbands and wives are, I like this one, I like that one.
That's the beauty of it, too. Everybody's different. Everybody's palate's different.
Yeah, and it made it easy, you know, because the husband took a 16, the wife took a 17, and everybody's happy. And we're happy. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah. So we have 17 cab. Do we have 18 and 19 cab coming down the line? Are those in
right now? Yeah, we'll have a 2018 cab on the on the cab, what we've done on that is gone to the bulk market and talked to quite a few producers out there and ended up buying stuff that kind of fit our palates and what we were looking for on the quality basis. And then came and did some tweaking at a state crush on it to make sure when it would hit the bottle that it was to our specifications at that point. And we'll do the same thing for 18, and we're probably going to be introducing a rosé as well.
Oh, of what variety?
But that is TBD.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, I just sent out some inquiries on that this morning, and we'll be putting that puzzle together over the course of the next couple of weeks.
So, Doug, do you anticipate having fruit ready for a production from your vineyard, your cab vineyard, about 5 years will it take, or 3 to 5 years?
So this in 2020, I will not have production. 2021, I should have a decent amount of production out of it, enough that we will definitely have a vintage for my vineyard. So it actually, I put it in before this past summer, and it's actually all up on all the wires and hanging over. So it had a nice summer and is looking pretty good.
Looking good.
So for my first time grape grower, even though I was a fairly large farmer, I was kind of happy to get it all up on the wires and get it up there. But we also have cherries on our property, and just by luck, the farm that takes care of our cherries for us happens to be a substantially large grape grower. So I've had a nice consultant.
Yeah, well, that's great.
So
yeah,
it's been kind of nice for me. So
this multiple viticulture we have here in the Central Valley is really awesome. So we have cherries right next to cab. Can that impart any kind of benefit to either one of those different crops?
See, now you're getting into the philosophical side.
Yeah.
I probably don't like to say out loud because I probably have some weird theories that probably would sound stupid out loud, but Steve and I were just actually talking about this a couple weeks ago, watching the grapes harvest and the dust that was coming up because, we were so dry going into the fall and all winding up in the trailer with all the grapes. I'm like, how does the dirt that is getting on the grapes not impart some flavor into the wine?
See, I love this stuff. This is what I geek out on this.
And then we got to talking about it, and this vineyard has a flavor of limestone to it. And I'm like, well, how does the limestone flavor get up to the plant into the grape? Is it more logical that it's on the dust on the outside of the grape that went in? I don't know. I'm just talking out loud. It's fascinating to me. And there's a lot of a sort of art to the winemaking process that I think that falls into it, that maybe people aren't even paying attention to.
Right.
It happens. So.
Well, there's definitely something to the terroir in wines if you're talking, the slaty minerality of a Mosel Riesling or the eucalyptus from a Kunawara, a Cabernet. I mean, there is something to it, I'm convinced.
Well, and it's part of the discussion we were having. I used to be in the processing tomato business, and the trucks you see going down the road look red, but they, they don't have dirt clods in there, but they have dust and dirt on the outside. In a tomato processing plant, that equals, several, 3, 4, 5, 25-ton truckloads of mud leaving a day. That's just on. So I would think it would impart some flavor in the grapes, too.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Let's see.
Are you from Escalon, Doug?
Yes.
Okay.
That's where I grew up out in Escalon, which, is a... It's funny looking back on it. It is a fairly substantial grape growing region. we always thought of it as a dairy region, which it is a huge dairy region, but it is a fairly substantial grape growing region as well.
Yeah, no, I went out there recently and drove around and was looking at it differently from where I was usually going, would be Angle Field to watch an Escalon football game and cover that for the record. And this was a wine trip, so to speak. It was for a tasting, so I was looking at it through different eyes and really kind of surprised by the amount of acreage under vine, and of course noticed a lot of the dairy farms too, which is great.
So, there's a lot more trees and whatnot out there that have obviously moved in as well, but it's always been a grape growing region, even going back to when I was a little kid. But a lot of those foothills out near Farmington and even out towards Oakdale have been put into vines over the years, and there's really thousands and thousands of acres of them out there. But, even as a kid growing up, I think we just drove by them and never paid attention that they were there. But it's a pretty large growing region, yeah.
let's make people's mouths water right now and talk about the wines that are available to consumers from McCallum & Cove Cellars from the 17 Zin, which is the current release, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
What can people, do you think, or what do you get on that wine?
Well, as I said, it's a completely different wine than the 2016. The 2016 was an East Side wine, and the 2017 is a West Side wine. And if you've ever done any tasting of those two geographic regions, you know that there's a difference in the wines. And is it what Doug's talking about because of the dust particles in the air, or is it coming up through the ground? I don't know, but it's a completely different wine. This wine, the 2017, still quite young. We bottled it in July and released it November 16th. So it's still aging in the bottle, but as it develops, it's an extremely fruit-forward wine. And you can put, you know, all the descriptions that you want on that. You certainly, you know, taste the, you know, the cherries and the smoke and all that kind of good stuff, but it's just, it's a very smooth and subtle wine that just pairs up great with food. Really pairs well with all kinds of food. And then the 2017 Cabernet is really extremely drinkable, and I would actually turn Doug over to that to kind of describe it, because that's right up his alley.
Well, we actually got kind of lucky on the the clone that comes out of is clone 6, which all the different clones of Cabernet that are out there. That clone was found by UC Davis up in Jackson. It's an extremely low producing tonnage variety, so not many growers grow it because it's hard to even get a couple tons off of it. So to be able to find a local grower with that variety and be able to acquire it was actually pretty exciting. I'm not great at describing wines on the fruitiness of it, but it is definitely not a super heavy Cabernet. It's got a ton of flavor to it in my mind. It's still new in the bottle, so it's changing. That is another one of the fascinating parts about the wine business, about how it, you know, from out of the barrel to into the bottle, it's still developing. I think this is a wine that's, you know, if it sits on the shelf for a year or so, it's going to taste even better. It's going to open up a little more, and it's going to have a lot more flavor to it even as it goes along. So I really enjoy it. As I drink some Cabernets around, I find them to sort of run together. This one definitely has some unique flavors to it that, you know, with my eyes closed, I know I'm drinking our wine. So I've enjoyed it so far. But like I said, I think we got lucky finding a clone 6, and Steve's tried to talk me into putting clone 6 into my vineyard, and I don't want to because it doesn't produce enough.
So, we have to think about economics.
Yeah, I just, as a farmer, just, you know, I can't do it. It doesn't produce enough, but it definitely makes one hell of a wine, that's for sure.
Can you tell me who the grower is or where this vineyard is? Or
We can't tell you who the grower is, but I can tell you that this comes from, you know, if we look, it's over on the east side in the Alta Mesa region, in that vicinity. And again, it is an extremely drinkable, even right now, Cabernet. I love Cabernet Sauvignon, but I prefer it. I like to have open a bottle of Cabernet that I'm going to have with my meal. And I want a big chunk of red meat or some pasta, things like that. But just to open up a bottle of Cabernet and sip it in the afternoon, that's not my first preference. But this particular cab, it not only is it sippable, you know, it goes great with food as well.
That's great. November 16th had to be a real exciting day for you guys. It's when you kind of launched your brand. It was at Woodbridge on Court. I heard it went great.
It was fantastic. We had a crowd there. We had an event that went from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. And we just, you know, we don't have a significant mailing list. We don't have a significant wine club. We just started into the venture with social media virtually 2 weeks before that. And I don't even know, what do you think the head count was that we ended up with, Doug? It was,
you can just come out and say, we were a little overwhelmed with the crowd. we were having trouble squeezing people in the door, and which was great. And I'm happy that people appreciated the wine, and people came out to enjoy it, and people took it home and loved it. But yeah, I think Steve and I were both a little taken aback by the crowd size. So.
Yeah, the partnership is what I'll call it with Woodbridge Uncorked has really been a godsend for us, because, as I said, we're not an estate winery, we're a virtual winery, and so the first question people always say, well, you know, where's your tasting room?
Right, of course.
Well, we don't have a tasting room. Well, you know, are you even a winery?
Right.
And so we happen to know Bree from Woodbridge Uncorked from her past life at the Woodbridge Inn, and she just was gracious enough to give us an opportunity to go in there, and I think it's worked out well for both of us. So we're very excited about that relationship.
Right, and we're excited to have a little From the Vine group page get together. So here's one day advance notice if you're listening to this on December 11th. The get-together is December 12th, so if you're listening to this after December 12th, well, we'll just tell you that you missed a good time, I'm sure. So your wines are available there. We're really looking forward to that. And Brianna Woodyard has been so gracious to allow us to have this event, and I'm hoping it's the first of many more. But enough about me. Back to you. Where can people kind of get more information about McCallamy Cove Cellars, website address, anything like that you want to throw?
Yeah, the best place to go is to our website. Very simply, www.thecovewines.com. And the reason we chose that as our domain, we're obviously McCallamy Cove Cellars. Certainly we recognized early on McCallamy is a mouthful, and to try to have people type that in and understand it, we needed something that was a little easier to navigate. And as we went through the domain game,
right,
we settled on several that we've acquired the domains for, but the Cove Wines rolls off the tongue, so that's all you need to remember. The Cove Wines. Go there. You can buy our wine. We've got some great specials going on right now. And wine makes an excellent holiday gift.
It absolutely does. Yep, it's the default gift people give me.
Exactly. <that. laughs>
Well, Steve Nelson, Doug Langham, thanks so much for your time. It was a great pleasure to sit down and get to know you guys a little bit better. And I'm sure you're off to some great things, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks,
Bob. Appreciate it, Steve. Thank you. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
All right. That's the From the Vine podcast with McCallamy Cove Cellars. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.